What happens when somebody comes that aid or set up? Somebody that is in a very difficult relationship.
Two, somebody comes today, unfortunately, situations where people question Yiddishkeit, etc., etc., you know, whatever phenomena, however you want to call it, off the derech or whatever it is, somebody comes and in the conversation he's attacking, in the conversation he is presenting questions, so on and so forth. Where do you go with that? Our nature is the common attitude is, what do I tell the person to show him that he's wrong and to prove to him the emes? And we sort of, the direction we're going with is the more strongly sound, the more sound my arguments are, the more vehement my expression is, the better it'll go. That's if I can prove him how wrong he is and show him off what he is, I certainly will triumph, and so on. That is the framework of those type of conversations. The same thing is true when you have a friend and you get into some sort of fight and the person is wrong and you want to prove him he's wrong. You marshal very strong arguments, you show him up for what he is, and you expect him to be a little bit of a mensch and to acknowledge that he's wrong and that he wasn't mensch and to apologize. And the question is just, how strong an argument can we present? That's the type of thing we want to talk about. The Torah speaks about it, actually, and there's a lot, and it's something that, it's a sugya that we need to learn, and I think it's very important. Let's start with the miracle. It says they all came back, and everybody was, they roused up everybody, and everybody was very upset. And Kalev got up, and he said, it says, Vayas Kalev Asa'am. He told everybody, you think this is what Moshe did? Everybody kept quiet. Well, let me tell you what he did, and so on and so forth. It's cute. Yes, it's a very cute spiel. Is it something of substance enough that the Torah should write it? I mean, is there any great... Yes, it's a little cute, one of the shtick that a speaker might use. You know, it's sort of a surprise turn of direction. Great. Is that very, very profound? Is that something the Torah should make note of? We don't know what he said. We don't have anything written except for Yask all of a sudden. That's all. So is there anything there that bears understanding and so on? Secondly, it says in the parasha, it says, Vaita, Va'avdi Kolev, Ekev Hoysev Ruach Acheres Imo. Kolev had a different Ruach of him. Kolev had, the root Ruach is very positive. So Kolev had a different spirit to him. So Rashi says, what does Ruach Acheres mean? Shtei Ruchos, Achas Bepeh V'Achas Belev. He was, I don't want to call it two-faced, double-tongued. He said one thing to them, one thing to them. Now, again, I understand that they would have probably lynched him and probably was not mechuyev and Mesiras Nefesh. So he needed to play a game with them. But Akash Baruch would have said, if we were writing his Shevach, would say, despite the vagaries and raglim, his heart was solid with me. But the Torah says, Ruach Acher Seisi Imoy, he was double-spirited. He played their game, and he did his thing. Is that a shvach? The shvach is that he was faithful, that he kept the faith, he believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and so on. But where is this hef coming from? And even the expression, Shtei Ruchos Eches Bepeh Vechet Belev. Eches Bepeh Vechet Belev is a very, very derogatory term. It is a term used about somebody who's dishonest. That's what it's used about. He's thinking one thing and saying another thing. A salesman. I know it's a piece of junk, but I'm putting on a spiel that this is really great.
Now so he's going to fix what he's going to fix. The Chavetz Chaim, that was his mind level, that he was doing it from the inside, they came to fix. Now
but again, so that's a ploy. It's a tactic. But the word, would you use the same word? If you were doing that, I wouldn't say, what's your name, by the way?
Kobe Fleck.
I wouldn't say Kobe is a gewaltige liar. I would say Kobe knows how to get people on board. He knows how to stay safe or something. But Echad Bepeh Vechet Belev, every other place that it's used is derogatory. It's a pejorative. It's not a common term. So why call Echad Bepeh Vechet Belev? Echad Bepeh Belev means that it's something that is double-faced, that's what it means. So say that, again, I'm not denying the fact that he obviously was doing it for good tachlis, all of that. So describe that. Don't describe, Erev Be'er Be'lev is not used anyplace else except for this description. So that's where I want to come off in the Torah. So let's look at a Rambam and understand something the Rambam is saying over here about Avraham Avinu. The Rambam does not usually give historical introductions to his halachas. There are three exceptions. Chanukah is one, and that's obvious because Chanukah is not written in Torah Shavikzav, and he needs to explain what Chanukah is about. There's another place in Ketushin, Nishus for a reason. And also about Azara, the Rambam spends an entire perek describing the development, the evolution of Avodah Zarah. The reason he needs to do that, I think, is simply because he needs to explain how did the mistake get started. If everybody believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everybody knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how did it get started? Okay. But then he says about Avraham Avinu, Avraham was born, despite the fact that everybody thought differently, Avraham Avinu was somebody who was thought different than everybody else did. He came to recognition, so on and so forth. Now, once he got out of Haran, he started doing kiruv work. And he says, V'hischil lamod v'likros v'kol gadol l'chol ha'am. He started announcing, lo diyom sheshal kai echav olam v'loi ro'al avod. He announced there is one God, and he proclaimed it loud and clear for everybody to hear. V'yemahalach v'korei u'mekavet sa'om me'ir le'ir mamlocha mamlocha. He gathered people together until he got to Canaan, and it's like it says in the Pasuk, Vayikra Shom B'Shem Hashem Kilolo. So the Rambam is describing, this is a very important point, Rambam says he came to his own Akara Vamuna, and then there's a Chiyo, the Rambam says that's Avas Hashem is when you like something, you want everybody to like it. It was a natural outgrowth of his own belief that he rallied people and he proclaimed the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Fine, good. Then the Rambam says, V'kibisham miskaptzen lo, V'sholon al dvarav. And then people would gather around and would start asking questions. He would explain it to each one according to his understanding until he brought it back to Derech HaEmes. Now, the Rambam here, the Rambam in all of Mishnah Torah, that's in the Rambam, all of his writings, doesn't use extra language, unnecessary details, flowery language, and so on. Every single thing that he writes here, A, comes from Chazal. It's how he learned up certain Chazal. And there's a reason, like we said before, the reason why he explains Avraham Avinu's Kirov program is because Kirov is a necessary outgrowth of this. But once he gets to the details of the Kirov, he says, well, he would go and proclaim Hashem Echad. Fine. And then people would gather around after the Shir, and everybody would ask questions, and would answer everybody their questions, Vidaito. What's that about? But yes, I know, I'm sure he made a nice Kiddush. And he had the official Kohen make signs, Avraham Avinu's come to town, Tzadik Balair, and come, and so on and so forth. I'm sure there were a lot of other details. What's this about? What is he saying over here? Kirshon is captain, they modiokarfa if you die touch at MS. So let's discuss this point, because this point I think is the heart of the Nekudah trying to make. In Lashon Kodesh, there are quite a few words for speaking. And one of the primary ones is Amira and Dibur. Many of the guy in the Mal, many explain Rashi and Chazal differences in Amir and Dibur, and they're all true. One is harsh, one is soft, one is barichus, one is bekitzer, and so on and so forth. I'd like to offer another distinction, which is really at the heart of many of those differences. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's speech at Brias Olam called? Basar Mamorim Nivra Olam. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's speech at Har Sinai called? Says Adibris. Amira is what comes out of my mouth. What's coming out of my mouth, that's called Amira. Dibur is communication. What comes out of my mouth is not communication yet. There has to be somebody else and somebody else listening. And somebody else listening and understanding what I intend to say. When the world is created, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, quote unquote, spoke, whatever that means, but there was nobody listening. Those are called mamar. Asar mamar nivra olam, because the world is created with mamarim, and that's what it is. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's utterances, that's the way to say it. In Har Sinai, when Klal Yisrael was ready to listen, now you have Dibros. Now you have a series of Dibros. So Amira and Dibros are very, very separate entities. One is what you say, and one is talking to somebody. I once said, Pshat, we say Sheva Brachas, there's a piyut over there, that for benching, it says that Oz Ilayim Bishir Yoram, it's a pasuk from Yeshayahu, that when Mashiach comes, the mute will begin speaking. That's wonderful. What does it have to do with the Sheva Brachas? Baruch Hashem, somebody, one Letz once said, because when you hear some of the speakers, you feel that this was the Mashiach times, because many people have nothing to say, yes, speaking. That's, I once heard from somebody else, I guess, Alderach HaLotze will say. But, what? No. That's another possibility. Let's not get into marriages. Sure, let's just stick to this. But the difference is, before Chava was in the world, Adam, it says, Vayikra, he called everything shameless. There could be a mirror. There was no dibur. You can't speak unless you communicate to somebody. And therefore, with the Bria of Chava, dibur came into the world. Amira existed before. It says Avram was co-reshamed to everything. He could utter, but there was no communication. So Amira, we would say, is speaking, and dibur is communication. In order to communicate, and Adam's great koach lies in dibur specifically. Amira, maybe the animals also have Amira. I mean, I don't know, when an animal grunts, I'm not sure what it is. But dibur means a clear communication between two parties. That's Koch Adam. Adam is able to speak, and that means he transcends himself. It's interesting, if you take a look, there are a few times in Tanakh when it says Vayomer Alibo. It's Hashem said Alibo, and other places. It never says Vayidaber Alibo. There's no such thing as Vayidaber Alibo. You can't communicate with yourself. You can speak, you can use the metaphor to speak in your heart. You can't you can't use dibur for that. In order for dibur to be effective, I need to be able to bridge the gap between me and the other person. Now, three possible things could happen. There's an old yeshivish joke, and again, it's ascribed to Aaron Kotler. I don't know if there's a mitzvah lemem shem amro, and I don't know if it's whatever it is, but the vert, there's an expression in Yiddish, when you want to put somebody down in learning, you say, "Aploidet v'ashikra Turk." It means he's rambling like a drunk Turk. It's an old Yiddish expression. So Aaron Kotler said, "Alamdash etaych." What's the pshat? A person is rambling like a shikra Turk. What does it mean? So he said, when somebody is drunk, he doesn't know what he's saying, but everybody else does know. Person speaks Turkish, he knows what he's saying, nobody else knows what he's saying. A Turk who's drunk, neither he nor anyone else knows what he's talking about. So that's where the expression comes from. Now, that was a halotze said over him, fine. But in the dibur as opposed to amira, we have three possibilities. One is, I communicate with the other person. What's in my heart, I'm able to express, and express it to him where the person understands and gets what I mean. That is dibur at its ideal. There are two possibilities of it going wrong. One is, I deliberately tell him things that he wants to hear when I know it's not true. That's a terrible aveira, and that's called chanufa. I tell somebody, you're driving to Shul HaShabbos, for you it's a mitzvah. That's a terrible thing. The person, I'm doing it because, for whatever reason, I want the person to feel I'm in agreement with him, and I'm telling him something I know is not true. And the same thing with the sales. I tell him this car's a wonderful car, and the car is a Tranta. That's where I take the Koach Hadibur, and I slice the peh, the communication, from the lev. I know the emes, and what I'm conveying to him is nothing like it. That's a pagam in Koach Hadibur, a terrible pagam. The Chazal say terrible things about Hanufa. The other shortcoming is, I'm saying the emes, and I'm saying it bechol meir hatakfei. it goes nowhere because the person does not understand me and doesn't get me. I'm speaking a language doesn't understand. I'm speaking too softly. I'm speaking too loudly. Whatever it is, that's also a gam in koach hadibur because it's not going anywhere. So we have two possible gam in koach hadibur. Echad bepeh vechad belev is a derogatory term because it means basically that I am saying, communicating something that is cut off from the emes I know to be true. But what's more important is there is no communication to the other person unless I'm speaking his language or to him. So that's Pshat Rambam. The Rambam says Avraham Avinu needed to bring emuna and a baron to the world. There are two phases for that. One is I need to proclaim an emes as it is, and I need to say it loud and clear. But that does no good to anybody because everybody understands differently. And that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says if in the chiyuv to go out and to teach people, there are two stages. One is Avraham Avinu went out and it was korah b'kol gadol l'chol ha'am lodiyam sheshel chayach ha'om v'loravad, and then he says v'kiv sheyam miskapsin lo v'sholim al tvarav. The second stage is people come to me and say, what did you mean this? I don't get this. This is not true. He would explain each one lefi daito, until they would bring to emes. So to bring somebody to emes, there are two coordinates. I mean, mashma davadema, that we can always use contemporary mishalom. Imagine I want to get somewhere. So the Waze or the GPS or whatever it is finds my address. Now he knows where I am, but I want to get to somewhere, and I don't write that in. There's no way they haven't yet invented. Maybe they'll invent some point that where he knows where I want to go, even if I don't want to go. But right now, it ain't getting me no place. If I don't have a destination, it's not getting me. And if he doesn't know where my location is, I can say I want to get to point A or point B or point C. But if he doesn't know where I am, he doesn't know what to tell me. So I know where I want everything to get to. Emunah shleima HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Great, but where's the person? And if I don't dehair each one lefi daito, if I don't dehair each person for what he is and who he is, then there's no way I can bring him to the emes. I can talk and yell all day long. I'm not touching base, I'm not communicating. That's the pshat of the Rambam. I want to take it one step further, and this is, I think, what's most relevant to us. This is true about intellectual things. Everybody has their own preconceptions. Everybody has their own axioms, and I need to take each person where he is. So that's a curative type thing. What about real life, where we deal with many, let's say, be'on chavero, and even in religious areas, the vast majority of issues are a lot more complex than a lumdish question of, you know, can God lift the rock or not lift the rock, and that's not what it's about. I want to go to a halacha. When you come for din Torah, so you have dayanim, and they listen, they paskel. So there's a halacha. V'tzorech hadayin l'shmoa divrei bali dinim. The dayan has to listen carefully to what each side says. V'lishanos also, and he needs to repeat it. Shenema vayoma melech. It's a Rambam, and it gets it from a pasuk in Malachim. Vayoma melech. It says when the two women came to Shoma melech, the king said, Zoyse meres zebni achai bnei chameis, v'zoyse meres zebni achai bnei chameis. He repeated what they both said. Masik said, in believe of achaka chodcho. What's the purpose of this halach? So the poskim have two explanations. One is to really make sure that the Yonim understood. If I repeat in front of you and you say, no, that's not quite what I meant, that's one. The second one is the Baladinim should feel confident that the Dayan is passing and understanding them. And I want to, I want to explain it. It's not just the technical aspects of Din Torah. I mean, let's take a look at Shlomo Melech. This is where the halach is. Shlomo Melech was the wisest of all people. Was brilliant. Shlomo Melech, everyone is chachma, anybody in this case would come to them would automatically know, yeah, this was a brilliant move. The purpose of Mishpat is that the Baladinim themselves feel and understand that Mishpat has been done. It is the hardest thing to accept a psak din against yourself. Who was it I saw brings? I think it was Soloveitchik brings that his grandfather, Reb Chaim, once passed against a butcher, something Torah, and the guy stalked out and made some very harsh remarks about it. And a few weeks later, they passed him on a Kaddish Sharif, and the person was accepted it without problems. And Reb Chaim, Reb Chaim went with one of his children to ask Mechila before Kol Nidif and his butcher. He said, I passed him right, but I know you're hurt. I want Mechila. And the butcher told him, Rebbe Mechila, Mechila he, I want my money. And Reb Chaim explained that this is something a person can't face the fact that he's wrong. It's much more than the money at stake, whatever it is. Nobody feels, and so there's an extraordinary emotional involvement in this, and the person feels wronged. The purpose of Mishpat is the person should feel Mishpat was done. And therefore, the Dayan has to be able to give both sides the understanding that he understands they were coming. This case of King Shamelach. Shamelach had no negias. Nobody can accuse him of bribery. His chachma is marvelous, and everybody wonders his chachma. But the woman whose baby was taken, it won't accept it. So by telling it to her, and I'm adding, telling her in a way where she understands that he understands where she's coming from, made it into a mishpat that he was able to communicate to her that didn't. So in the world of emotions, if a person doesn't feel that the person speaking to me, understands where I'm coming from, there's no way that his deep will reach me. It will stop short of me. I told a story about my father's Hanvracha. My father was Miroshe Ravenish Finkel. He was an extraordinary wise person, very, very wise. It's the people and it's the life. There was somebody was Nifta, left over a sizable Yerusha with 5 children. Never a very good formula for Shalom Bayis. And they were at war with each other. And it was going from bad to worse. And people tried to intercede, and people tried this, and people tried that, didn't work. One night, my shver comes to one of the brothers, and like very furtively, like making sure nobody's there, and he says, I want to tell you something. I thought about this whole thing, and you're right. 100% you're right. And he spent an hour explaining to him why he's right. And then he said, Mashatam, I'll do whatever it takes for you to get your fair share of what you need. I said, but I want something in return. He said, what? He said, you know, you're going to come into the money, and you know, you can give a chaimish. I want 20% of the money for a shalom fund. I want to be able to give people a little extra on the side. So they're not going to feel, you know, they don't deserve it, this and that. But shalom is a mitzvah, and it's not different than any other mitzvah, haskalah and birchon. It's I'm using it for a shalom fund to give them a little bit on the side, so that they feel that they got something. So of course, you know, I'm a yid that you know very into mitzvah and so on. He went to each one of his brothers, and he got the same commitment. And then he settled it. It was very easy when you have 20% of each side for the Shalom Fund, then you're good. And that was it. But the reason, and one of them years later told my mother-in-law his side of the story. Nobody knew the other side of it. He told my mother, the only one who really understood me was your husband. And that was the only way he was able to get to his heart, because it's more than you know. When a person is much involved in something, it's a lot more than some sort of objective halacha. It's not like whether the chick is kosher or not, but you're telling me I'm a ganav. You're telling me I took something I shouldn't have. You're telling me I owe him money. If this guy did nothing, I have to give him. There's a lot invested, and unless a person can emotionally resonate to the person, it's not going to work. So we have the same idea of dibur being communication. And communication requiring that the shomea, that my diva reaches him, is what's required here. So I want to offer a point. Echad bepeh ve'echad belev is a it means that I know what's right and I know how to communicate it. Yes, the communication is different than the way I understand it because I need to communicate it to that person. I need that that person should hear it. So when I divorce, the Echad Erelev almost always is bad because what I'm doing is I'm changing the emes to suit me. I want to flatter the person because I need him. I want something, so I tell him nice things. I tell him things that, that I think he wants to hear. Alternatively, I'm trying to fool the person. That's very bad. But when you need to communicate, it's different. And I want to go back to the Raglan. It's just a simple ploy that, you know, is, do you think this is the only thing that Moshe Rabbeinu did and so on? It was much more than that. I think he sat down and said, wow, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu has really brought us into a difficult matzav. We're here stuck in the Midbar. We have this country that's very, very difficult, enemies and so forth. But let's think a minute. Is this the only thing Moshe did? Let's look at the context. Let's give a mashal. Imagine somebody wronged somebody else. Two people are partners, neighbors, whatever it is. And this person did not look to me. And I'm very upset. So if somebody comes and tells me, you shouldn't be so upset, I guess if there's a pie around at the table, I will take it and toss it at him. If not, I'll tell him something unkind. I'm going to be very upset because I feel this person ignored my pain. If you were in a situation, how would you react? So I need first to sit down and I tell the person, wow, that's incredible. That's stuck. Then when the person feels I understand where he's come from, I say, but you know, there's something strange about this. Tell me, what's your relationship with this person until now? He's been helpful. He's been nice. He's been fine. So something must be missing here. Maybe we don't miss it. It can't be that somebody who 10 years has been nice and friendly, we're missing something here. I understand how terrible it is, but we're missing something. I want to say the same thing is true about whatever you call it today, people going off the derech, people, you know, so on. Nobody at middle age leaves because he had a rashi that didn't know pshadim. I assure you, there is no such thing. It's past the age when people deal with that. That's not what's happening. Nobody uproots his life and because of kashas. Because if you went on the internet and said it's not clear who wrote Megillas Esther, I assure you. But people have been hurt badly. I wanted to say, when I have a question on who wrote this or that, it doesn't bother me much. But when a Rav that I liked and trusted does something I think is mean to me, or I'm disrespected, or whatever it is, or I'm stuck in a very difficult home situation where I've been suffering miserably, I want to ask a thought question. If a person will come to you and tell you about somebody who's going through a very difficult period of time, and he will ask you, how could a Kaddish Baruch who's all good do that to that person? We all will have wonderful terutzim. Even if we don't have, we'll know where to send them to. Tell them, I know, but you know, Kaddish Baruch Hu, this, that, everything. Chas v'shalom, if we have a bit of a difficult spot, and we're going to get shaken. Why? Because it's not an intellectually, what's the difference if I know I'm inside a gomer and nothing chas v'shalom could happen, so if something happens, it's a big kasha. But there are other tzaddikim who are around also. I'm never bothered by that question. And Eov was never bothered. Eov didn't know that people suffer, but until it didn't hit him, that's what the Satan said. Try hitting him with it. Yes, he's a big tzaddik and he knows the answers and he understands the emunah shleima, because there's an emotional upset. Almost many years ago, there was somebody, a very chashu person who was going through a very tough tkufa, illness in the family, and somebody made a crack about, he's taking it very personal from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. But it is like that. It's a lot more complex. A Kaddish Baruch Hu, who my relationship is, that he loves me and cares for me and wants for me, and I'm going through such difficulties. So really, that emotional component is very powerful. And if you start by telling the person it's nothing, it's this, it's that, then you have not talked to him. You're not talking to that person. And the louder you shout, someone told me this, there was somebody, again, a younger man, who had been sitting for a long time learning, and then started questioning this, that, the other thing. So I don't know. So somebody, somebody sent to me whatever it was. I shmoozed him, and then his Rosh Hashiva called me and said, this guy came to his questions, and I told him, Chilas Kvaitcha, you're not even a tenth as smart as the Vilgoyin, and the Vilgoyin said, this is right, this is that, da, 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 da. And this, I told this person, I'm friendly with him, so I could be a little more open. I said, you missed the boat. What do you think, at 40, there's a kasha? Don't you understand he's upset? And whatever you're telling him, it's reinforcing what he thinks, that Yiddishkeit doesn't care about you, and Torah doesn't care about you, and Rabban only care about their rabbinics, that's it. Don't you understand the person's coming from somewhere else? And unless you find where it's hurting, unless the person feels that you found and you understand this pain and you're empathizing, you will get no place with it. A person kind of stunned. You never understood that. But that's what it is. The godless of Kalev was Ruach Acheres. I mean, he was able to handle two different ruchos. A ruach is what the person is, and he was able to say, what is the emes and what are these people? He was able to take the emes. He wasn't playing a game and flattering people because he wanted to be popular. And he also was not sticking to his emes and not understanding where they're coming from. It was not a silly ploy. That Vayas Kalev means he was able to. It's like when they have these Japanese martial arts, where instead of pushing against the person, you take his motion and you schlep him with the motion. He tapped into the people's anger, upset, and then said, yes, Moshe got us in the spot, but let's think a minute. But but it's strange. Moshe's done so much for us. Why would he do so much and leave us in the hole now? That's the goddess of color. My Rabbi Chaim Shulevitz used to say a lot. It says, "Vaydab Moshe in Pinchas, Vaydab Moshe Hashem Leimar Yifkad Hashem Rokei Ruchos L'Chol Basa Ishal Ha'Eda." Hakadosh Baruch Hu should find a person who can be a Mimuna on Klal Yisrael. So it says, "Rokei Haruchos." So Rashi says, "Ribayin Shalom Golu Lifanecha Daita Shkal Echad Ve'Echad." You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Elokei HaRuchos. You know that you create each person a different mindset, different mentality, different ruach. Please get me a manhig that will be able to approach each one according to his das. Because it's useless. You could schlep people along. You could coerce people to do things. You could sort of seduce them to do things, but you're not leading them. Leading means that you're getting them inspired to do it. And a manhig, and that's what it says. Asher yetzi lefneihem, asher yotzeihem. He goes out first. He goes ahead of everybody. Asher yotzeihem, asher yaviehem, and he's able to bring them. Those are the two ruchos. The ruach of knowing what's emes lamito as an objective emes. And the communication, the peh, echer peh ve'echer lev, is the ultimate in koch adam. When they're synchronized, I know where I want you to be, and I know where you are, and I know how to get you from where you are to where you want to be. It's something that is so godl in what adam is. It's so godl in dibur. It's so godl in everything. But most important, these two areas, I think, today it's something that is extremely crucial. One is in the world of Ruchnius. We deal with people, Baruch Hashem, on the one hand, I always told people when I was growing up, the question was, how many people are going off the derech? The question was, who is on the derech? I mean, the default setting was not on the derech, or a different derech, or whatever you want to call it, and how many people became Shomer Mitzvah, how many people learned. Baruch Hashem, we have a tzibur that, by and large, that's the ruach of the tzibur. But that also means we face the issues of people that are falling to the wayside, going off, and so on. The understanding that, on the one hand, we need to have a clarity of emes internally, and also an understanding of the other person, and where it's coming from, and where he is. And the first thing we need to do is sort of get that emotional rapport with the person. And then, like the Rambam says, then you could possibly lead him. You know, without that, there's no chance. If the person doesn't think you are where he is, then all the strongest drushes, and it's nice to say a strong drusha to the choir. When you preach in the choir and you speak Dvarim Chaitzvim Lavasesh, you're mechazik. But when you're talking to a person who you need to move forward, then you need to start with the person. Two, in Bei Adam Lechavero, there is never a situation, almost never, where you have some altercation, some sort of friction between people, and one person is 100% right. It's more than that. It's the same event, the same objective event is experienced by two people in different ways. Let's give a marshal. Two people come to the Torah, and the Rav Paskin's Reuven is right. So, what does Reuven think? What does Shimon think? Always, Reuven thinks the Rav is a man of integrity, the Rav knows halacha, the Rav understands the business world. What does Shimon think? The Rav is a slouch, I'm not sure that he's 100% honest, he doesn't understand the business world, and I don't know Hashem Mishpat, but I have doubts that he really knows all Hashem Mishpat. It's universal. That's the way it is. And Chas v'Shalom in issues of marriage, it's much more amplified. If you try to rectify, when you have an issue with somebody, if you try to rectify the issue by explaining to the other person as passionate as you can why you're right, you're only making it worse. The same way that if you want this and the other end of it, he's experienced the same. Yes, the objective is the same, but he's experienced something else than you've experienced. You've both experienced something else. It's like a marshal when they have these things testing for colorblind. Is that a 6 or is that an 8? That has no answer. I see it one way, you see it another way. The only thing I could say is if I measure it with a certain instrument, this is what comes out. But my experience is a 6, your experience is an 8. And like Karzal said, there's no arguing. If I want to make up with a person, it's a person that I want to make up with, I need to put myself in his shoes and I need to feel the event like he felt it. It's probably the hardest exercise of Aron Chavero, and the hardest exercise. We can have rachmanis on people, we can be kind to people, we can reach out to people. But when I'm trying to understand how he experienced it, when I experienced it so differently, it's very difficult, but it's never going to come round unless it works that way. And therefore, probably the biggest, the critical factor in real Israel and Chavera, when there's somebody, in Shalbai, same thing. A woman and a man experience things differently. A, because it's a woman, and A, because it's the same event. And if you keep thinking about how you experienced it, it's fine. You can stick to your guns and you can get your way. But if you really want to try to undo it or you want to try to repair it, you have to stop at the other person and say, let me put it on the other person's shoes and experience it the way they experienced it. If I start with that and the other person feels as Kamaya and Panapana is sincere, then it can move forward. Once a person feels you understood me, like that story with my Shver, then I'm open. As long as you understand why I'm the one who's been victimized, I'm quite amenable to moving forward. When you tell me move forward, and I think that you don't understand it, I'll tell you a funny story of my Shver. My Shver was also very sharp-witted and liked practical jokes. He had that type of personality, for those who know, remember. I was once there for a Shabbos, and Matzah Shabbos, we're about to leave, we opened the door, and there's a dog there, and the dog looked like kind of it might be rabid. There were no dogs that should have been there, whatever, I don't know. So we slammed the door shut, and we kind of didn't know what to do, and so on and so forth, screaming out. My Shver had a neighbor on top, Rav Druk, passed away recently, those of you who was in Schleimer, phenomenal speaker, very sharp-witted also a Geschmacker person. He, my Shver, they liked each other, kidded each other. Kids said, he looks out his window, see what's happening. He says, Rav Benish, don't worry, trust the Eibush, it's Veseda, Kol Kelov, it's that. Sorry. That tempted my Shver. My Shver told us to get inside. He walked out and kicked the door upstairs to his door front. And then he yelled out, Rav Juk, he says, don't worry, it was a friendly ribbing, but the point was, don't preach to somebody where you're not there. And that's why a lot of times when somebody's going through a hard kufa, the person that can reach out the best is someone that went through the same thing. Someone outside, I'll never accept. So do I think Reuven's telling the truth more than Shimon? I mean, they both come from the Torah, but Reuven suffered this type of loss and Shimon didn't. The answer is, he connects to me because he is where I am and he doesn't connect with me. So both in terms of and reaching out people, this, the idea of deep being two-phased, I need to know the clarity for myself of what's emes, I need to understand the other person, I need to be in resonance with the other person, and then I can connect with the other person and be emes v'yoshpia. Okay.
Good question.
Yes.
There seems to be in Shalom bias today, you talk about the kayach of dibur and the pagam of dibur.
Right.
People want to dial up that maybe in the Jura movement, it's softening and that the beds in Eishet Torah, different places in Israel, are less than they were maybe 20 years ago. Shalom bias, maybe more marriages are on the rocks a little bit. Is there a pagam in communication in Dibur? How do you still see that perhaps, what is it in our generation? Is it just technology? What do you see that's leading to this pagam that we're experiencing?
I don't know. You know, it's a big question. It's you know, whenever you paint the larger the picture you paint, the harder it is. There are many factors. I think one of the things is there is there was an incident many years ago. Somebody in high school. I wasn't involved so much, but this person touched base and. The person was being asked to lead the high school for some good reason. And this person said a nusach of, he reached out to me. I wasn't involved at the time in the high school, just mismanaged that time. And he said, I failed to see how this is going to help me move forward, whatever. So I said, you know, but there are other people, another 100 people in the high school besides you. Like, maybe the decision was built on the other 100 people instead of you. There is an emphasis. A lot of times, to be able to live with another person, instead of stressing how wonderful it is for me to be married, how wonderful it is for me to have to think of another person. And, you know, there's so much of an emphasis of how somehow we translate it into making my life better, instead of making me a better person by needing to live with something I don't understand. At the end of the day, men and women are different. And that is the key to why it changes a person. Lo tov yosadam levado is because I only think of things from my frame of reference, like we're speaking about. There's no deeper. So whenever a person asks me, a person says, I'd like to go to the game, would you come with me? I'm not in the mood. I say, no, that's normal. But if I have to take care of somebody else, and that person, it is important to go to the game. I don't like it. The game, the opera, the shop, whatever, you know, fill in the blank as you wish. It's the pshat is, yes, but there's another person. And I'm not a ben yochid. That changes a person from being low tov to being tov. So I do think there's a lot of, we've become very focused on understanding ourselves and what's good for us and realizing ourselves, being in touch with ourselves. Part of, there's a certain element of low tov. Because there are things, marriage, a family. I have a very wealthy man in the DC area who he's a donor to the yeshiva. He's not a firm person at all. Very nice person, he's a donor and very thoughtful person. And he lives in a house that is not kefi chvoidei. In other words, it's a nice house. It's not huge. And he told me when he bought the house, he has two children. He said. He wanted it small enough so that they have to intersect with each other. He did not want a house where everybody has a wing to himself. He said they need to be able to run into each other. And sometimes who's using the bathroom? Who's using the kitchen? Who's using this room? If a person doesn't do that, then he just becomes wrapped in himself. And I think that's part of it. It's yes, when you don't understand yourself, and you don't understand what's hurting you, and you don't understand things that you're not going to be able to fix it. That is true. So understanding yourself and reflecting is very important. But when life starts, you know, like this person, as a kid, this person did something wrong, and he needed to leave the school. And this was after a lot of soul searching. And when his statement was, I failed to say this will help me, as if the decision is simply based on it's the best thing for him. But there are 100 other people that your being there is extremely difficult. It didn't even occur to him that it might be based on someone else. Just how will it help me? So I think that's part of it. It's part of. It's like, let's give a simple. The argument today prevalent against having a family is, it's a lot less expensive and a lot more quote unquote rewarding to deal with to think about yourself all your life. So every penny I earn, I think of how I best want to use it. That's really the difference. And when you have a family, your time, your money, your effort, and your life is focused on somebody else. And you're duty bound. And the answer is yes. And that's exactly what the Torah calls lo tov yosef levado. When a person is levado, he is self-centered. Even if he gives money to tzedakah, even if he does whatever, his life revolves around what he would like to do. And when a person is married and has a family, a person's life is dedicated to family. It's the major step of taking a person out of his lo tov yosef levado. I was, Rabbi Chaim Shlevitz used to make a kiddush every Shabbos for the family. Like the family, they want their family together. So one of Reb Nachum's oldest daughter got engaged, and Reb Nachum had a son who was older, 24, 25. In those days, they would get married, people would get married later. It was in the Chavim Yeshiva, it was a Litvish style. There was a Yishlaim there that was there, and he spoke, he was a Shtekel Mishpacha. They did this. So this kiddush was kind of for the, you know, covered the engagement. So this person went after the brother who was old. He said, "Lo tov yosef levado." The longer you're levado, the more lo tov you become. He was adamant about it. But there is something about. Now, I think that's an area where a lot of things come up with it. We tell people, but when you're part of a tzibur, you owe something to a tzibur. When you explain to somebody, let's say a person asks about school regulations or this or that, so that's the. When I explain to you why it's better for you to wear this or to learn this or that, we already missed a boat. And I try to stress a lot more. I want you to say something. A school is a tzibur. And a tzibur means you get a lot from the tzibur and you give a lot to the tzibur. And there's a certain common denominator. It doesn't fit everybody perfectly. But being a tzibur means everybody's learning the same mesechta. If everybody learns the mesechta that's best for him, you have a library. You don't have a yeshiva. If everybody does the hours that are best for him, you have a center. You don't have a yeshiva. And part of being part of a tzibur means that you shtel tzu to some bigger entity than yourself.
You see a trend of the yeshivas.
What do you mean?
Everyone's making this yeshiva for this kind of guy and this kind of guy.
So you know, if you have, again, as long as a person is mechuyev to a tzibur, listen, when you search for common denominator, let's say one person has an IQ of 200, he can learn 10 blood a day and one person is struggling. You're going to have a very hard time creating a viable tzibur. Just like if you have a very chassidish yid, a very modern yid, a very this, they can come in and daven together, but it's very hard to have a tzibur because there's such different needs. So there is a balance of finding an appropriate common denominator, but every common denominator requires, for this person 753 is ideal for that one, for this person 745 is ideal for that one. We need, whatever it is, I need to shtel tzu, there are other people than myself. There's old Siddush of, I haven't ever said it, but it's that the year and a half that he was a Ben Yochid destroyed his midas for a lifetime. You know, he was the oldest, and for a year and a half he didn't have a sibling, so he was the only Tatala. And it's also part of the American Mishagas is to raise Bnei Yechidim. Even if you want to have two or three kids, you want to space them 20 years apart so that each one is zeichet to have all the attention. Another way of calling that is Lotov Eser Levado. A kid that is the only person that everything revolves around is the most destructive thing you can do. Yes, I know for you it's a little better, but there are other people, and we balance everybody's needs, and we create a common good, and we'll talk about some of them. Okay.
Did you get all of it?